Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today we're going to be talking about personalities. Yes, you know, part of the beauty of the human species is that everybody's different. Everybody is kind of different, you know, kind of different, but different. And it's the uniqueness that makes people so beautiful. And usually what makes people really unique is not so much how they think. Of course, some people are smarter than other people. And it's not only what they do, but it's how they feel. What really makes people unique is the different makeup of their emotions. You know, just how they feel, what they feel, when they feel it, and how they react. That has got so many combinations that it's just amazing how it's like fingerprints. You know, if you combine somebody's love with somebody's hate, with somebody's anger, with somebody's fear, and how much of each one they've got, you get these number of variations that are just so incredible. Incredible. I mean, just think about the difference between you and your mate. Who gets more angry? Who can love more? Who has more fear? You know, and then compare that to even in your own family, you know, you have brothers and sisters. And you'll see a uniqueness between each one. Well, what I want to explore with you today is what makes personality as it relates to emotions. What makes your emotional personality? What makes up an emotional personality? How can you understand it? What creates it? What's the beginning? And we're going to go with the assumption that nurturance in all of its different forms is what creates personality, leaving out of this discussion things like chemical imbalances and anything else that may have formed your personality. But just for the sake of this, let's talk about an adjustment, you know, the adjustment to childhood. That you're going to make your personality or someone's going to develop their personality out of an adjustment to childhood. So if you grow up in an environment where there are people who are highly emotional, then you wind up generally being highly emotional. If you want to grow up in an environment where people tend to be very unemotional, you tend to be unemotional. So if you were to take somebody from who's in a highly unemotional state, let's say somebody from Geneva, who doesn't show much emotion, even though they must feel it, and then you bring them up in Sicily, they may get a little confused, but they'll be a little more emotional. And if you take someone from Sicily and you bring them up in Geneva, they're going to be a little more reserved than the rest of their brothers and sisters. So it kind of makes sense that the environment, immediate environment, helps create the personality, but it gets more specific than that. It gets really more specific. There are basic fears and basic personalities. There are messages you receive in childhood. Because in childhood, parents are either comfortable or uncomfortable with a child's emotionality. Children are by nature emotional, right? A child is born, it screams, it yells, it hollers, it doesn't do anything, nothing gets held back. It adores its blanket, you know, and then it could transfer that love on to you. And then babies have a lot of emotion. They emote this emotion. You hear it. You hear them emoting. They could cry, they could scream, they could laugh freely. Based on how much comfort the parents have with the child's emotionality, the child adjusts its emotional self. That makes sense. So if you've got a little child and a baby, and the baby realizes that when it screams, dad withdraws from it, or mom walks away, it eventually stops screaming. Or if a child is too joyous and too bubbly, and you have a parent who's uncomfortable with that kind of stuff, the child begins to be less bubbly. We tailor our emotional selves according to our environment, to our caretakers. And then we take certain parts of ourselves that we realize that they don't particularly like, and we discard them. So if it's not good to be an angry, petulant child, you realize you lose love because of it, you get rid of this petulant self. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, in case you just tuned in. It is a classroom on the air. It's basic psychology, but it's more than that. It's as intricate as you can get. I try to teach as much as possible what I've learned over my 30 years experience in working with people. I try to teach you some of this stuff so that you could understand people better than you do. Because if you understand them, you can love them better. You won't want to have to send missiles and bombs to kill them because they're different. And you won't become a victim as well. So, let's go back to this idea. See, now here's the idea. The idea is we have an emotional baby, and the baby has a parent, and the parent's not too comfortable with the baby's particular emotionality, you know? So if it's a petulant child, an angry child, and the parent doesn't need an angry child in their life and they can't stand it, the child adapts its personality. It says, better not be too petulant. As soon as I find out what that word means, I won't be it, says the baby. I won't be too angry. I won't, you know, I'll inhibit myself. I'll change myself. I'll learn how to go to the bathroom properly, right? I mean, keep in mind what infants do for love. They give up their diapers. They learn how to go over to a toilet. I mean, this is all for love. This is what they get trained for. The baby who gives up parts of themselves because of the messages they receive from parents becomes what we call a fractured self. Fractured meaning you become a fraction. You take a fraction and you try to throw it away, a fraction of 5% of me. I'll kind of chuck that away because this way I'll be more lovable. I won't be angry. I won't be jealous of my sister. You know, I won't be mean. I won't be all these other things. You know, I won't be too needy. Now, the trouble with this is the fractured self is the origin of all of life's anxieties and fear. Because you take part of yourself and you throw it away, you become nervous. You become filled with kind of an anxiety because you know something is missing and you don't know where to find it. So people who are very nervous are fractured selves. They've tossed away part of themselves in early childhood, and they don't know where to find it. So they're looking for it right and left. They're looking for it everywhere. So very nervous people, manic people, are frantically searching for themselves. And they don't know it. They think they go shopping, they're going to find themselves. If I buy that product, I'll find myself. If I get that mate, I'll find myself. Depressed people believe they'll never find themselves. And that's what the depression is. It's almost like they're waiting to die because I can't find me. And that's what depression feels like. It feels like a state of anxiety, but a kind of a surrender. I can't get that love that I need. I can't find myself. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So I want to get specific about what happens to different people according to the messages that they receive when they're young. Okay, now just to give you an example, there are many different messages that you could receive. One such message is about mistakes. You know, you have a baby. Baby makes mistakes. It grows up, it makes mistakes. Of course it makes mistakes. It's trial and error. That's how it gets through life. But for some children, the kind of parenting they get, it is no good. You're not allowed to make mistakes. No mistakes. It is not okay to make mistakes. And that becomes the unconscious message that you have learned from one of your significant figures, your mother or your father. And this message has such a profound effect on your growing identity that that you give up part of yourself to make sure that you could pay attention to this message, because in order to get love, you cannot make mistakes. Now, all of us make mistakes, and all of us are okay with our own mistakes, but there are some people, especially the rigid ones, they don't like to make mistakes, and they hate themselves for making mistakes. Now, a person who has bought the message that it's not okay to make mistakes, they grow up generally feeling like there's something wrong with them, that there's something broken because they make mistakes. They don't know it's okay to make mistakes, so they grow up feeling bad, corrupt. A part of them even feels evil because they make mistakes. And for the rest of their lives, they are searching to find some form of well-being, usually in the form of integrity, it could deteriorate into a kind of a critical perfectionism. So you go from somebody who can't make mistakes to becoming a perfectionist. And you can see it. If you see somebody who's a perfectionist, you know, you go over to them and you'll watch them. And they're dreadful about finding mistakes, about making mistakes. And they feel inside that there's some part of them that's really seriously damaged and broken. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, in case you just tuned in. And if you just tuned in, you can find this entire program on by going to the website, thepositivemind.com. And you could go there and you could look under the Positive Mind radio program and you could find archives. Or you could go to WBAI.org, which is another font of information. And you go there and you search up The Positive Mind and you look for it. The direct route is to go through thepositivemind.com, but you could also go through the WBAI website, which is very rich as well. So you could learn more about this, because this may be a little too difficult for you, but I want to pack a lot of information in here for you today. It's about personality. It's about forming personality. Now, so one says you can't make mistakes. Now, another message that people have in childhood, and this is especially true of certain children, it is not okay to have your own needs. You can't have your own needs. You're not allowed to have needs. You can't be too needy. Right? Now, that's a very important message. Because most children, it's okay to be needy. You're a child, you know? But it's not okay to have needs. And those kind of people who feel that they have needs, but they're not allowed to have needs, it's not okay to have needs, they always grow up feeling kind of unworthy of being loved. These are the people that are most attracted to dysfunctional relationships. Because, you know, they don't feel really worthy of being loved. Because they have needs. Now, it's not like the person who makes mistakes. That's a different thing. They feel broken inside. This is the person who feels unworthy of being loved because they feel needy. Now, how does that neediness manifest? The neediness manifests in an eternal search for love, to be loved. And you get loved by doing things for other people. And the reason you do things to other people is because you need to be needed by other people. So your need is so strong that you need people to value you. And if people value you, they'll reciprocate your love. So all from this kind of original message. The original message we receive as kids. Another original message we get is it's not okay to have your own feelings and your own identity. You know, it's okay if you have needs, it's okay if you make mistakes, but don't be too distinct and don't have your own identity. You're one of us, you're one of the family, don't try to stand up too much. You're really not allowed to stand up too much. Now that message, which gets on to a lot of kids, that turns into a terrible fear of being worthless. Or being without any inherent value. Because mind you, if you're not allowed your individuality, if you're not allowed that as a kid, you have a terrible fear of not having any value. That person grows up with a desire to be valuable. So much so that it deteriorates into people who chase after success. They look for their image to be perfect. They want to be seen as having value. So they're very concerned about their appearance and about how they perform and their jobs. Now, mind you, I'm talking about different personality types, and this is Armand DeMille. And I've already described three different personality types. One is a person who tends to be too critical and tends to be a perfectionist. The next one is the kind of person who needs to please people and needs to be needed. And the third one, who is this performance-oriented person. It's always interesting, the choice between those two words. And desires to be valued for what they do rather than who they are. So it gets a little confusing. You know, and of course, if you're a shrink and people come in to see you, what they do is you've got to kind of look at them and say, oh, what kind of personality do I have here? And if you could figure out the kind of personality you could get, you have, you could probably figure out the kind of messages they received in early childhood. A fourth kind is, get this one, it is not okay to be too functional or to be too happy. Now imagine if you're a kid, you're an infant, and you're in a crib, and you get a message from people, it's not okay to be too happy. Calm down. Relax. Don't be too happy. Well, that kind of person is doomed to be depressed. You know what I mean? Because the message from childhood is, I won't love you if you're too happy. And people need to be loved. But what you do from that point on is you're kind of caught in this quagmire about, you're not allowed to have your own identity, you're not allowed to be too happy, you're not allowed to be significant, and they spend the rest of their life searching for personal significance. And usually these people search for personal significance by trying to be unique. You know, trying to be unique, or trying to be special, or trying to be different, or trying to be outside of it, or they're very self-indulgent. So the messages from early childhood that go to your personality frequently will determine how you're going to come out. Unconscious messages, like I said, you know, your parents didn't mean to do it. This is probably the way they grew up. This is probably the message that they had. Another type of personality grows out of the belief that it's not okay to be comfortable in the world. You should always be a little afraid. Now, there are parents who are always warning kids, warning them, you know, watch out, watch out, watch out, watch out, be careful, don't, you know, and they get the basic message. Now, usually the people who grow up this way have heard this message, and their parents lived this message. Their parents live with a basic fear. And they're basically frightened underneath everything all the time. And then they have a child, and the child comes out, nice, happy, little bouncing baby. And they warn the baby, watch out, don't fall over the crib. Don't play with that toy. Don't put that in your mouth. Fear, 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 fear. And the child learns it's not comfortable in this world. And the child grows up feeling very frightened. And what they do is they begin to feel useless, they feel incompetent, they feel like they make too many mistakes, and they have this incredible desire to be secure. So secure, they want to be secure. They have a terrible fear of being without support, without having anybody around to guide them. They depend on other people all the time. And as a result of it, they have a desire to be secure, and they wind up being attached in beliefs. You know, they have belief systems they get attached to. It could be religious. It could be the radio show, The Positive Mind. They just find something, and they lock into it. And they say, this will help me because I'm frightened all the time. And we continue along with personality types. Among one other is, there's one that an infant will get, and it's a funny kind of one. I've seen parents kind of let children know this message. And the message is, it's not okay to depend on anybody or anything, anytime. Now, can you picture a parent? You know, I see a cowboy kind of bringing up his kid, and he's trying to say to a kid, you just fall off that horse, and you get back on that horse, and don't depend on anybody. You got to be your own person and don't depend on anybody. This is not against cowboys, but, you know, I spent some time in Dallas, and It was there in the attitude. You know, it's like you take care of yourself. Don't depend on anybody ever. Well, you don't. That may be a childhood message, but if you're developing a personality and you really inside believe you should not depend on anybody ever, the one thing you're going to do is make sure you never stay in one place. And so you spend the rest of your life not attaching to anything. You run away from everything. You move from thing to thing to thing. And these are the mercurial personalities that you see. The ones who just kind of flit from one thing to the next thing and they never complete it. And they always have a lot of plans. Plans to get out, to shift, to change. And their relationships could be very, very intense, but they're short-lived. They're dynamic and they're passionate, but, you know, they gotta get out before the getting gets bad. Another personality type we run into is a person who is never, they get a message when they're kids, it's not okay to be vulnerable. And it's not okay to trust anyone. Now, believe it or not, parents give this message to kids. They say to kids, don't ever trust anyone. Don't ever trust anyone. Well, I understand nowadays somebody may steal your baby. You know, if you leave them down, like if you put them down on a rock, maybe a boa constrictor will come along. But, you know, there's a certain amount of trust that you want to leave in a child. If you're the protector of that child, don't leave it up to the child to have to protect itself. But there is a message, don't ever trust anyone. And when children get this, they not only get paranoid. Paranoid is one way you could get, but you get controlling. And what you do is you live in fear of being harmed or controlled by anyone else. And you spend your life protecting yourself by always fighting and maintaining your independence and controlling people. And lastly, there's a personality type that receives a message as a child, it is not okay to assert yourself. Not okay to assert yourself. And that's a person who is always afraid of standing up. They always feel kind of fragmented. And so what they do is they become kind of stubborn in how they neglect themselves. And they always have a desire to be at peace. They have such a desire to be at peace that what they do is they will put out any fires. In fact, a lot of firemen I know are like this because their role in life is to put out fires. Well, these are the people who will never allow anger to exist. If somebody gets angry, they want to calm them down immediately. Now, this starts off with, it's not okay to assert yourself. And since you believe that it's not okay to assert yourself, you believe that anybody who asserts themselves has to be squelched. And the way you squelch them is you reason with them. You don't just push them down, you put out the fire. You talk to them, you make reason, you try to find out why they can't be angry. And this kind of personality is a person who goes around all the time negotiating with people and making people calm down. So look, all these different personality types, and all seem a lot different, all based on some kind of childhood unconscious message. I'll read you the messages again as to the different messages that children receive, and I know many of you are going to say, oh, I received 5 or 6 of those, because you did. But each one is distinct. What was the primary message that you received? Number one, was it's not okay to make mistakes? Number two, it's not okay to have your own needs. Number three, it's not okay to have your own identity. Number four, it's not okay to be too functional or too happy. Number five, it's not okay to be comfortable in this world. Number six is it's not okay to trust yourself. Number seven, it's not okay to be dependent on anyone for anything. Number 8 is it's not okay to trust anyone. And number 9, it's not okay to assert yourself. These are the messages that guide our childhood. And they guide our childhood so much, and then they guide our adulthood, and they guide our desires to have relationships and relationships that we have, and we kind of desperately seek out to try to find in the world the pieces of ourselves that we give up when we're little. So, this has been a long presentation to you. I hope that you could pay attention. I hope that you stayed with me. It may be too much information, but remember, you could always listen to it again. The basic desires of people turn from those messages in childhood to have a focus of their life. And it feels like the focus of your life is your choice, but it's not. It's based on a fragmented childhood. A childhood where you gave up certain things to be accepted and loved by other people. And what you developed is a personality that's always desperately searching for the love you needed as a child. And how do you search for it? You could search for it by trying to become somebody who is a perfectionist. You could search for it by being somebody who needs to serve people. You could search for it by becoming somebody who is searching for success. You could search for it by being self-indulgent and being somebody who needs to be different and unique. You could also search for it by trying to become an expert at something to become competent. Or you could search for it by trying to be somebody who feels secure and you spend your whole life searching for security. You could also try to be in your personality somebody who has a desire to be happy and to be so happy that you have to avoid all pain. Or a need to protect yourself by dominating the world. And finally, the need to put out all the fires. And to make sure that everybody around you and you never get too angry. Which of these are you, my friend? Today we're going to take your telephone calls when we come back from our break. We have a little break. And when we come back from the break, what will we be doing? We'll be taking your messages. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. We'll be back with you in just a few minutes, and then I have a very special, tender piece of music to play for you today.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener-supported and non-commercial.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Ben Webster with Tenderly. Ben Webster, Tenderly. How fine. How fine. Nice and soft, you know, soften it up a little bit. My friends, the telephone number here is 212-209-2900. With you with the positive mind. We've been talking about personality, in case you just tuned in. If you think that we're a jazz show playing things like Ben Webster, we do that occasionally. Maybe I could hit you up in the second half with something even deeper than that. With the permission of Michael G. Haskins, our incredible engineer. 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls on issues of personality and your own personality and messages you received as a kid in your childhood. And we've got time. I'm with you. This is wonderful. We've been off for a number of weeks. We were away during our fun drive and we were doing special programming, but this week we're back and this is a public affairs program, which means that we are concerned about how well your affairs go. 212-209-2900. We'll take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. I know where they're usually. Our first call takes a minute for us to get up.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hello there.
You got to turn down your radio.
Hi. This is Leora.
Leora, I hear your radio is on in the background.
And okay, it's down, Armin. I want to thank you so much for that song that brought me way back my time.
Glad you like it, Leora.
Yes, now my request, when you mentioned the last piece of assertiveness, that touched a button in me, because when I was growing up, I was not allowed to assert. If I did, I had a stonewall experience from my mother. And so I wanted to share with you and the audience that now, of course, I know I'm aware of it now, and that's the secret of change. But when I start to assert, I start to assert myself, I was angry because I couldn't. So now, as an adult, I'm very much aware that when that button is touched, there's a residue there. And when I do it, assert myself, anger comes out. And then the person will say, how come you're so angry? And I said, I'm not angry. But then I remember that that button still has the residue of the anger that I had when I wasn't able to talk up. I wanted to share that with you and ask you what you think, that the button could still be there.
I got you, Leora. You know, it's amazing, and thank you very much for calling in. We'll hang up and I'll share my response with you. Yes, it's true. You know, when you're not used to doing something and you do it for the first time, or you begin to do it, you sometimes do it too aggressively. Both of them, you know, not being able to express anger. Not being able to express anger and doing it a little too harshly is kind of showing the sign that you grew up without it being allowed. And it takes a while to be able to get in there and to express yourself efficiently, effectively. And it's interesting because people do notice the anger that's behind it, whereas you might not. You could just feel like you're asserting yourself. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Well, I know we've got the calls there. I know my friends have called in.
I'm on?
Yes.
Peace and blessings. Hold. Give me 1 second.
Sure. I'm going to give you a second.
Rashida here. How are you, beloved?
Good, good, good.
Okay, my question to you, Armand, is what is the message that we send to children when they get beat, whether they think it's deserved or not? Because most times it's not. And right now I'm the greatest advocate for children not being beaten.
Yeah, there seems to be an awful lot of messages behind it. You know, there's a lot. One is that you're bad.
Mm-hmm.
Another is I'm bigger than you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the I'm bigger than you are one that kind of people like to use to be able to control their kids. The third message is I'm out of control. I,
mm-hmm.
the parent, don't have a way of getting you to do things that I'd like you to do because I just don't know how to do it.
Okay.
So it shows powerlessness in a parent. It shows their helplessness. It shows the way they grew up. It shows a lot of repressed anger that they have towards their own family. I mean, when you're beating a child, you know, you got to be kind of unconscious.
That's so beautiful that you say that. I had an experience that I thought I would only read about in the newspaper last Friday. My son, who's now 30, tried to kill me. He literally took my head, slammed it into the wall. Mind you, he's never put his hands on me before, but I always saw this rage because you hit me. And I stopped hitting him when he was 12. And I saw other methods like the Big Brother program, rites of passage, different things. But I'm here to say, right now I'm the greatest advocate. Prior to him ever doing it, I realized by him being 12, that's 18 years ago, he sat on this volcano and it erupted almost with my life. My granddaughter who was here, I'm screaming and hollering for her to run down the fire escape to call the police. He said, if you call the police, I'll choke you. And he commenced to choking her. That gave me a chance to get to the door, and it kind of distracted him a little bit when she ran down to the fire escape. In the meantime, he had bashed my head. I thought, I'm going to the hospital, get thoroughly checked out. I mean, the police came. I went to hospital. All of this that you would never think, going to court to get an order of protection against your child. I'm telling people, and everybody says, well, I got beat. It didn't affect me like that. I didn't try to kill my mother, but it does affect some people like
that. Rashida, how old did you say your son was? 30?
He'll be 31 years old next week.
Yeah, he seems to. Was he doing any drugs at the time?
He does weed and alcohol. To me, that's drugs.
Yeah, it's the alcohol that will also
He wasn't drunk. He was clear. But it has a residual effect.
It sure does.
Wow.
So what happened to your son? Is he arrested?
Right now, he ran. He ran. He's staying somewhere. I don't know where he is. The domestic violence program changes the locks. So they're looking for him. And his wife was here. He just recently got married June 6th. If it wasn't for her pleading, even though she says, I don't remember, I just saw some pushing and shoving. But I'm saying to her, this is a preview, because I, his mother, am every woman. So to her, I said, she's from Indiana, she's Caucasian, she'll know nothing about, I guess, about his past. He has this rage that my mother beat me for no reason. I said, Wally, what about all the times you got put out of school? And I put you in a different school, in a better school.
Well,
you
Rashida,
made...
I hear the tragicness
it's
of
really,
your family
wow.
relationship, and I'm terribly sorry you've go through this, and I'm terribly sorry your son is lost, you know, in the way that he's lost. I hope that he's found and not just punished, but guided
right.
in some
no,
way.
Right. No, that's what I want, healing, therapy. But in the meantime, stay away from me. But seek some healing, whatever he has to do for him.
Some healing and some therapy, but stay away from my door until
yes.
you get better.
Yes.
Thanks for calling in,
okay.
Rashida.
Peace and blessing. Thank you, Armand.
Sure. As I said, you know, each personality is different, and people have so many different stories, and you could picture that. I heard that. I thought it was deja vu when I was hearing this, because I actually heard of another woman who spoke to me last week whose child tried to kill her. So what does that mean? I mean, you know, 2 in 1 week I'm hearing that people tried to, you know, son assaulted in such a way that he tried to kill. And I was once a consultant on a case where a son actually did kill his mother. It's not always the parent's fault. You know, it's not always the mother's fault. It's just a matter of eventually sometimes you crack. And I would say that alcohol probably has the biggest contributor. You know, cocaine is, of course, we know about that, and speed. But alcohol is part of that thing. It works on the mind in such a way, and it has this effect of saying, we're going to cut off whatever it is that inhibits you. Very often, not all the time. This is Armando Miller. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Well, 212-209-2900. We're going to have news flashes passing through here. We're having a small difficulty making a connection with the calls today, I think. So what I'm going to do for you today is I'm going to play... I'm here. There. Hi there, you're on the air.
Is this me?
Yes, it is you.
Oh, hi. Okay, hi, Aman. I love your show. Thank you so much.
Your name is?
My name is Claudia.
Hello, Claudia.
Nice to talk to you. I have a 15-month-old, and she is extremely, extremely friendly. She's very fun, and I was just listening to your conversation about trust. And the other day, we were in Central Park, and she was just so happy and going up to all these different people, and she had absolutely no fear, and there was no, she just basically was happy to go up to everyone and make everyone smile. And for a moment, I was really, let her do it. And then suddenly, I just thought, hold on a second. Am I displaying to her in a way? Like, should I have her fear a little bit to just go up to strangers and be so friendly with them? So that was my advice to you.
You mean that's your question?
My question to you.
Yeah, well, let me ask you about yourself, Claudia. How have you been with people? Have you been betrayed by people? Have you been...
No, not at all. Nope. I have a wonderful husband. We've been married for 11 years. Very good relationship.
But when you're out on the street, even without your husband, do you smile at people? Do you talk to people? Do you find that it's fairly easy to get out there?
Not all the time, no, because I was brought up in a really strict Italian household.
You sound very Italian.
And with my mother, she basically, don't trust anybody.
So how did you go from don't trust anybody to being the Claudia that you are to having a baby that you have? I mean, just think of how we've corrected the genes here. You know what
right.
I mean? Did you ever see the movie Household Saints?
No, I haven't.
Oh, let me recommend it to all Italian families, people who grew up with Italian families, and I mean, mm-hmm. that's me as well, who want to see some of the effects of the concerns
right.
of an Italian family. It's called Household Saints. It's rentable, I know. It's a remarkable, remarkable movie. It's kind of offered out as a comedy, but it ain't no comedy. So in this we have tradition, which is not just Italian family. A lot of families have traditions
right.
of fear. And then you somehow throw enough, you have all this fear, and you throw in a dollop of extra love. You somehow, your mom or your pop find a dollop, a little serving of love that they add to their fear-based mind in bringing you up. And you, Claudia, have a little less fear than they do. And then you find a husband who has less fear, too. And the two of you, with your genes, you combine them, and you create a baby, and you throw in another dollop of love.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that baby has less fear.
Right.
And now you have a baby who is relatively fearless. Mm-hmm. And there's a piece of you saying, but, shouldn't she be concerned about who she talks to and who she walks up to? And
exactly.
how do I get her to be cautious? Maybe I should give her a stun gun or something to carry around in case anybody hurts her or anything like that.
Right.
And it's one of those questions that I've seen. You don't have to instill fear. You
right.
just have to talk to babies. You just have to talk to children. But you don't have
okay.
to instill fear.
So talking to her...
Eventually,
okay.
that will grow. It never seems necessary to be overly cautious with children that are that young.
Okay.
Just protect them. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Just protect them. When I was listening to that woman who wrote the book about the Continuum Project, and she talked about how down in South America, the baby is always on your hip, and you're always on your hip, and you don't put the baby down, but the baby grows up feeling safe and comfortable for the rest of their lives, because you only put the baby down when it's ready to go down. You only have to tell a child about fears when you're going to let that child be in places where those fears are really appropriate. But if you're with your child, you're the protector.
That you is don't have wonderful to advice. Fear.
So, Claudia, how did you go from being a woman who grew up in an Italian family to wind up with an Australian accent?
Well, you know what? I think it's because I've been in New York for almost 12 years now, so it sounds a little bit twangy like that.
Not twangy? No. It sounds English. It sounds British.
Yeah. Did you say British or Australian?
Well, both.
Oh, yeah, British, yep. Well, actually, my parents were born in Italy, and they moved to London, and they conceived five girls.
I was the youngest of the five. So that's where you get it. You're strict Italian family with a British accent.
Yep.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for calling in, Claudia.
Oh, thank you, Armin. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
We're going to take another call. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi
there.
I heard your show yesterday, and I think it led into the show today.
Yes. There's
something I wanted to comment on your show yesterday, which also part of what you said today. You were saying that people a lot of times want other people to accept them for who they are, not what they do or how they dress or whatever. But isn't what people do for a living or how they dress or what talents they have or what education they have or what kind of humor they have, aren't all these things who they are?
No, it's what they do. It's what you do. You know, what you do kind of comes out who very often. I mean, it may reflect. And I mean, what if you were somebody who was going around doing nice things to people? Is that who you are? But what you do is different than who you are. And very often what you do is the opposite of who you really are. Because when you're a kid, who you are is not acceptable. So you become a nun. Like, let's say you become a doctor. And let's say the basic you are somebody who is afraid of death. You become afraid of death, so you become a physician. So you now feel like you have mastery over death. So your profession is not showing who you are, it's showing what you're afraid of. And so very often people, especially if you're a performer, you know, let's say you're a performer. Does that show who you are? You're an actor, an actress, a dancer? No, it shows somebody who's dying to get the approval of a parent that they never got. And so, is that who they are? No, that's who they're not. They're the unloved child.
But what about someone's interests? You know, what they pursue as far as their education?
Well, let's go with yours, for example.
They may have.
Let's go for yours, okay? This will be the... Are you Joe? What's your name?
James.
James. James, let's talk about your interest. What are your particular interests?
I have a wide variety of interests.
Yeah, okay. So now let me start with this one, okay? And let me say that you're a kind of person who does not easily trust anyone, and that you're a person who likes to stay on the very positive side of life. Is that true or not true?
I try to.
Yeah, you try to.
I mean, doesn't everybody try to stay on the positive side?
Isn't that a generalization? No, a lot of people stay on the other side of life. But I hear you getting a little defensive because you think I'm attacking you. No, I'm not attacking you. No, what I'm also saying to you is somebody who has varied interests and has a lot of different interests and who has a lot of different tastes and not just one taste, that's usually somebody who doesn't stand still too well. A person who likes to keep moving. And since it's a radio program, and since part of my art is to move things along as quickly as I can, I'm trying to just get to the bottom to show you what I mean. Now, does having many, many interests, is that a reflection of who you are? Or is it a reflection of somebody who's searching? You know? And I imagine, James, from the way you sound, you sound like you're searching. And if I were to take it even one step further, you know, what you're searching for, it sounds like you're searching for a place where you could settle down and finally feel safe. Tell me how that fits with what you're saying about what you know about yourself.
I think I'm looking to feel safe, yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm searching for things because I enjoy learning things.
Of course. Of course.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
If, in fact, what you're saying is true, and that, for example, a person's humor is not who they are, but what they do, for example, how do you distinguish what somebody is from what somebody does, or the humor they have, or the interest they have in life, or whatever?
Well, you know, the more intimate you become with somebody, the more you get to see who they are and you get to feel who they are. Do you have somebody in your life who you're loving very closely now?
No.
No. Okay, but you have had, right?
Yeah.
That's where you get to know somebody. You get to know somebody on a level of intimacy. But again, you know, and as I was saying about you, you're somebody who moves from taste to taste. And the way you get to feel yourself eventually is you'll settle in with one thing. And there you will feel your true self, wherever that is. And you sound like such an adventurer that I'm sure you're going to make it, James. And thanks for your intelligent questions.
Thank you.
Sure. 212-209-2900. We've got time for another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Am I speaking with Armand?
Yes, you are speaking with Armand. Yes, you are.
Armand. My name is Susie.
Hello, Susie.
Hi, nice to meet you. It's very interesting listening to you because I have a child that I feel like my husband wanted him to be the best at everything. Every single thing the poor kid did, he had to be top. He had to be the best. And now, the boy has something called body dysmorphic disorder.
Ouch. How old is he?
He's now 21 years old.
Yeah.
And it started with the hand washing. I would watch and say, God, this is strange. And actually, even before that, started with tics. He started having, like, tics in the middle of, like, a soccer game or something, and took him to the doctor, and the doctor said, if it goes, you know, goes away, just ignore it. And it did. It went away. But it really was, as my research shows me, that it really was like a sign of something to come.
Yeah, and now he suffers with body dysmorphia, which is, just to let people know, a hatred about your own body. It's like you hate parts of your body and you feel miserable because you hate yourself so much. And it keeps you out of life. He's 21 years old. Does he still live with you?
Still lives with me. I mean, I have done...
Have you done treatment for him? Has he had treatment? Has he had individual psychotherapy? Because we have a specialist here at the DeMille Center who specializes in specifically that disorder.
Mm. Well, he is going to someone, but I'm always looking...
Are they treating him with medication?
Yes, but my thing is that, first of all, I'm a very anti-medication kind of person. But it took me a while to put him on it because of that. But I'm always looking at research and always reading, and I can't seem to find materials that talks much about environmental issues, you know, that may have brought on.
So you're feeling responsible is what I hear. You have a part of you that somehow feels responsible for your son's disorder, and you would love to find something on the outside, because here we are talking about how our messages to our kids create their personalities.
Exactly.
And I feel terrible. What's your name again? Susie? Susie?
Yes, Susie.
Yeah. So, Susie, listen, we've got to get going now because it's the end of the program.
Okay.
But there is some information. If you send me an email,
okay,
and now here's an email address, Armand@thepositivemind.com. ArmandArmand.com. The Positive Mind is one word. Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at ThePositiveMind.com.
Right.
I'll follow through and I'll pass it along, and maybe we'll be able to get you some further information on it. And my heart goes out to you.
Thank you so very much, Armand.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. I have to be going now. I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., bringing you more exciting stuff about the human mind. Best to all of you. I'll be with you on Tuesday at 1.